Good evening, Trevor. Thank you very much for joining me for your monthly gardening programme. How are you this evening?
Very well, thank you, Sue, and I trust it's the same with your good self.
Yes, thank you very much. Now, you're going to let us know what happened in July.
I certainly am, yes. It was really, generally speaking, it was a very good month weather-wise, because although we had extremes, it didn't seem to do too much harm. We had very hot weather followed by extremely wet weather. So everything grew apace. So we are now harvesting all our hard work. So what I would say is that we still have to keep watering. And that's what I was doing in July, watering on in the greenhouse, because rain may fall for an hour or more, but it will not penetrate the greenhouse. So we have to be careful. A, we don't overdo it, but do not let the plants go dry. And that includes the tubs as well that you have outside, because the smaller the pot, the drier it becomes quicker. The bigger the pot, it will retain the moisture. But watering is a key element. Obviously, rainwater is better than most, but in dry spells, you have to use the hose and tap water. Deadheading is very much was on the cards for July as blooms started to come and fade. And it's very reassuring, to be honest with you, that all your hard efforts are coming up. The peonies had finished. With a lot of foliage around, but not any flowers. So what I shall be doing in August, I know we'll come on to that later, is that I will remove the fencing around it with the string, but all the flowering heads have been cut off. Weeding, hoeing regularly, that is what one had to do, because obviously with rain and sun, everything grows, not just the plants. So up they came. The latter part of the month, I was picking French beans and runner beans, which is a delight. Although there is a lot of foliage this year, there's certainly a plentiful amount of crops to pick from. And in fact, enough to for myself to freeze a few and to give some away. Peppers and chilies, I've continued to feed along with the tomatoes, and I pinched out the tops of the peppers and chilies, and the little fruits are really coming on quite healthily. Some, depending on the kinds that one is growing, some are small, some are big. In fact, the chilies I have in one pot are what they known as Apache, and they're smaller ones, but they're quite fiery, and the cayenne chilies a lot bigger and thinner. Rhubarb has now come to an end at the end of July, although there is still a lot of rhubarb stalks. They tend to get coarse and stringy. So if you are going to cut after July, make sure that they are small, thin, and relatively new. The idea of leaving them alone is that they will die down naturally. You will remove them and then they will reinvigorate themselves over the course of the winter. And during something like January, February, I will apply some manure compost to them. And in fact, it is now time, well, it will be time in the beginning of next year, is to divide them. But we'll come on to that at a later month. As I said, I've removed the tips on the tomatoes and in fact picked the first tomatoes during the last bit of July. They seem to be taking longer to ripen, and talking to a colleague of mine, he said that that seems to be the case. What the reason for that is, not quite sure, but we probably haven't had the amount of sun that we think we've had, and therefore it takes longer to ripen them up. It's still plenty of time, well into September, but they will start going apace. What you do have to look out for is to ensure that they are healthy. I have one that I don't think is very healthy. It seems to be wilting the leaves, And I think that is down to root rot. Now, that is possibly a case that I have overwatered. We all make mistakes, but overwatering is a thing that does happen. Another misdemeanor that happened to myself this year was during the potato crop. One main or one second early row was absolutely brilliant. And the second row, I could see there were signs of blight. I cut off all the stems, as you should do, left it for quite a few days. But unfortunately, when I dug the hallums, which is the collective name for the foliage and the tubers below, they did appear to have blight. And blight is reddish brown under the skin. Now, it might look okay when they're drying out, but unfortunately, what happens is it rots down and becomes putrid and, well, it's unedible. So you just have to take the punch on the chin and discard them. No good storing them, because wherever you store them, in paper sacks or indeed Hessian sacks, they will contaminate other potatoes. It's a fungus in a way. You can't do much about it apart from rotate your crops, which I have no problem in doing, but it's especially prevalent when it is very wet. So what else have we been doing this month? Beetroot has come on aplenty, and I have quite some large bulbous beetroot, which I don't eat beetroot, but that's one of the things I take after my father like that. He grew a lot of things that he didn't eat, but grew it for other people. And they're really, really coming on very well. And I've done those in succession growing so that they all don't come along at the same time. And talking of succession growing, that's what I've been doing in July with lettuces, carrots, radishes, and pak choi. And it's really come to fruition. Sometimes you have a better crop than others, but that's the way it is. Shallots, I've lifted the shallots in July. I waited until the leaves were yellowing a bit and they were wilting a bit, then lifted them for a day, let them dry. You probably should leave them longer on the surface of the soil. But given the weather, I harvested them on a dry day, shook the soil off, and then put them into sacks ready to be put out on a dry day onto rugs. And they really take about 2 weeks to dry. So you're picking them up, taking them in, bringing them out on a good fine day, and you're doing that for about 2 weeks until they become, or the leaves become papery. And then you know that they've dried and you haven't got really startling green stems. Now, what I've done thereafter is I've started to pickle my shallots, which I have to say I've got quite a few this year. So it's taken over a week and I'm still pickling. It's a process that I've been doing for years and years. I get the shallots, put them into a bowl overnight, leave them immersed in water, so that makes it so much easier the following day to peel them. And when you're peeling them, put the wrappings onto the compost heap after you finish. But once one is peeled, and make sure you don't have any ones that are not very good, put them into a colander, then put them into another container and cover with brine, salt and water, and leave that for 24 hours. Again, the following day, put them under water, rinse all the brine off, and then with sterilized jars, you pack the shallots into those, and then I put pickling vinegar. There are other ways of doing that. People make their own pickling vinegar or spicy vinegar, but I have shop bought stuff and I put it in there, cover all the onions, label it, seal it, and leave it for about 3 months, 2.5 to 3 months, when they're ready for eating. It's to allow the pickle, the vinegar rather, to ingress into the shallots. I have now only this week, on the final stages of drying the main crop of onions, which looks a good crop this year. You always have to watch out to make sure you haven't got any softer bulbs, or indeed white underneath the bulbs that you're lifting, because that is a sign of white root rot, or white bottom rot. And with that kind of disease, it means that the soil is then contaminated, and you shouldn't grow onions in that same spot for 7 to 9 years, which is a lot of time to have that land out of use for onions, especially if you've got a smaller garden and you're rotating crops. But we seem to be okay at the moment. They just need a few more days of drying, and then once they've dried, I will take off all the loose stuff, and then I will bring about half a dozen together, tie them up in a way that I can then hang them up in the shed. And that is a cool, dry shed, and that is the best way to store onions. Although some people, you can plait them. I'm not any good at doing that kind of palaver, so they just get put into the shed. Use the hedge trimmer on the hedge, ensuring that there wasn't, that was earlier in the month, ensuring that there wasn't any second broods of birds around. The hedge has got thinner over the year. That is a concerted effort on behalf of me and my neighbour, and we bought it together, because hedges can just go wider and wider and wider and taller, but we pulled it down but have actually made it thinner, so it's easier to see. But the birds love being in there, and given that it's an 80-foot hedge, it takes a little while, even with an electric strimmer, to go from top to bottom. But you're only doing it 3, maybe 4 times a year. Good exercise.
Okay, so we'll just finish this first part, Trevor, and then we'll come back and you can discuss all about August.
Okay.
Okay, welcome back to August Scrivers Air with Trevor Mallion, who's now going to give you his tips for August. Carry on, please, Trevor.
Okie dokie. Well, obviously, the first thing is dependent on the weather is how much or how little you water. I would say you've got to water the same as you did in July. The one thing is the daylight hours are shrinking, which is unfortunate, but that's the way it is at this time of the year. And always ensure that you water direct to the roots. That will save any scorching as well on the leaves. And continue to regularly liquid feed of all crops, whether it be your tomatoes in the greenhouse and peppers, or indeed your outside crops like beans. I use high potassium on both. One is a Tomerite version and the other is an all-purpose. And I also use my own liquid feed, which comprises of nettle leaves chopped up, put into a bucket, fill it as far as you can, put a brick on top, fill it so it covers everything with water in the bucket, leave it for a month. You will know that it's been there for a month because it will start to smell. And then you can siphon that off into plastic containers and use it as a liquid feed. Normally, as a rule, it is 20 parts water to one part of your liquid feed. So that is a way of making liquid feed go further, and it doesn't cost you much. And I use milk containers as well to put the stuff in and then mark it up and use it throughout. Chard, I'm regularly weeding the chard. It's got to come on a bit more now, and it needs space. So I shall give it a little bit more space. Once the beetroot is being picked regularly, it will have a little bit more space. They were probably grown a little bit too close to the beetroot, if I'm being honest. But chard is wonderful in terms of colour because the stems are different colours. And I think you know as well as I do, Sue, that when you have chard, you can put the stems into a stir fry and the leaves into a salad.
Yeah.
Saving seeds. We're coming into the saving seeds stage of the year now. So I've started to save some lupin seeds. I suppose it's a case you don't want to waste anything. You save lupin seeds and also foxglove seeds. Now, you have to be a bit careful with foxgloves because obviously they're a tall plant. And if it's a bit windy and you're cutting those off, they can disperse everywhere and they do self-set. So I tend to get a big bag, cover it, and then cut it off and then turn it upside down. So all the seeds are contained within the bag and they are very little fine seeds. You will have plenty. It's just remembering what colour the flower was that you're putting into the bag. Use the hedge trimmer on the hedge, ensuring that there wasn't, that was earlier in the month, ensuring that there wasn't any second broods of birds around. The hedge has got thinner over the year. That is a concerted effort on behalf of me and my neighbour, and we bought it together because hedges can just go wider and wider and wider and taller, but we pulled it down but have actually made it thinner. So it's easier to see, but the birds love being in there. And given that it's an 80-foot hedge, it takes a little while, even with an electric strimmer, to go from top to bottom. But you're only doing it 3, maybe 4 times a year. Good exercise. As I say, continue to hoe. The dahlias produce many buds at this time of year, and that is why it's important to deadhead to enable others to come through. The display has been brilliant. Different colours, superb. In fact, all the flowers have been superb, but they do need regular deadheading. So again, August is a little bit, in terms of looking after crops, a bit like July, except you're not sowing so much. The only thing I shall put into the ground in August is 2 more wigwams of, well, in fact, I already have, 2 more wigwams of French beans. That gives me a total of 7 wigwams. So, but I've utilised the space, A, for where the shallots were and B, where the potatoes were. But having incorporated fertiliser and blood, fish and bone into those areas prior to re-sowing. Pickling is carrying on afoot in August and I will endeavour to, like I did last year, is to produce some or make some pickle lily. Now I can use my own courgettes, my own French beans and little onions. The only thing I can't use is cauliflower, but you have to cut that up into little florets. And that is the painstaking bit about pickle lily, apart from making sure the turmeric doesn't go everywhere. Continue picking tomatoes, and as they ripen, take a few more leaves off from the bottom. They will probably, sometimes they will turn yellow. So just don't over remove leaves, but remove leaves once in a while so that from the bottom up, because as a rule, the tomatoes will ripen from the bottom up anyway. Again, it's freezing. Freezing your surplus, whichever way you wish to do it. As I say, I do onions, and I also, in some of the jars of onions, will add chilies. Now, I've stored last year's chilies in the freezer, so I just take a chili out, frozen, cut it so it's more potent, and then just put it into the jar of pickles or pickled onions. Black fly is a problem this time of year although it's a problem on broad beans, it can also be a problem with French beans on the stems and runner beans. If it's a small infestation, can't even say it, then you can do it by hand. What you really want to try to avoid again is to use a spray, because that would deter the predators from getting to the black fly, because a black fly is part of the aphid family, and what they do is they suck the sap.
Isn't it good to plant marigolds, and they tend to deter black fly?
They do. They deter quite a few things. In fact, I've got pots of marigolds around my garden. I probably didn't do enough pots, because you can't protect everything. So whilst I've got them against my French beans, and I haven't got any black fly there, I think I've got about 5 pots of marigolds. It's food for thought that maybe I need to grow, because marigolds are so easy to grow and they're so easy to harvest the previous year's seeds, to which, again, that is what I'm doing. Once they've dried out in the pot that I've captured the dead marigolds, that you can get about 20 or 25 or more of one flowering bud. But you're right, Sue. It's anything that helps that is a natural deterrer. Compost, it's probably your bin is getting full at this time of year, so it's imperative that you do keep up the regime of green and brown offerings into the compost bin alternately, and then apply a heat enhancer so that it breaks it down, and I add sawdust, cat litter, because it was recommended to me to do so. But it needs air. It needs air. So it needs to be, you're not going to take the whole thing up. A lot of people actually remove the whole content of a compost bin, put it into another, and then tip it back in again. Well, I'm not doing that. Time is so precious. I will move it around to get the air in it. But, and also, if it's dry and you're putting a heat enhancer on it, ensure that you water that in, because you don't want things, even in the compost, you don't want things to burn as such. That's why grass is good, because it produces a moisture as well. Although you don't want too much of anything to go into a compost.
Okay.
I think, apart from the caterpillar patrol, which I think I went through earlier, I think that is more or less what we're going to do for August. Just keep an eye on everything and pick where necessary. Removing the peony, canes and string, because then nothing's flopping over now, but do let the peony foliage die back naturally before you cut it back. It will turn from green to brown, and that is the time, because it helps, like a lot of plants, it helps revigorate underneath. In the case of a peony, I think it's like a rhizome, as opposed to a daffodil has a bulb, but basically they're recharging their batteries. You've got to give them time to do that. It's the same with the rhubarb. You've got to give it time to recharge. They've expended energy, they produced the goods, now they want a quiet life to recharge for next year.
Okay, okie dokie then. Right, well, we'll finish with part two and then we'll come back in part three with listeners' questions. Thank you, Trevor. Right, Trevor, we now have listeners' questions, please.
We do. First question I've got is, when is the last time to sow vegetables? Well, the answer to that is dependent on what is desired to be grown and the length of growing time given on the packet, more or less. as a rule, salad crops can be grown in a short period of time, and they would be lettuce, radish, crops of that nature. Others, you will come into the period of overwintering, but that is longer growth. But if you're looking for something to put in now and to have before, say, October, which is really a very short period of time between now and then they will be the main two, lettuce and radish. As I said, otherwise you're looking at spring cabbage, which you put in now to come up, obviously, in the spring. Other brassicas take a long, long time. And, of course, things like beans, etc., they will not survive a frost. And the daylight hours makes a hell of a difference to the growing speed as well. So only a few things can be grown now. I've put French beans in, but they were grown a couple of weeks ago, so they've now gone into the ground, and I'm hoping that they will be the last crop, i.e. October, other than me brassicas. But if they don't survive, they don't survive. I had a plenty this year. Now, the other question is, what damage does the white cabbage fly do? Well, I think we've touched on this earlier to say that it munches through your crops. So best to get rid as soon as possible. One way, if you've got a small plot and you've got a few plants, you can put over your crops micro mesh, which will small little holes that prevents the white cabbage fly from getting in to lay the eggs. It's not a bad idea, but it might cost you a few bob to cover your whole plot. But it is worthwhile if you're not prepared to go through and take the little blighters off yourself. How often should stored potatoes be checked, and where should they be stored? Good question, because you've gone through all the hard work and you can't eat everything at once. So once you've gone through your potatoes and sorted out those that immediately need eating and set them aside, I put mine in trays covered in newspaper away from the sunlight. The others will go into Hessian sacks, and they will then be stored in a cool, dark place. And that, for me, is in the garage. And what you would need to do is every month or every 3 weeks to a month is to go through the stored potatoes to see if there is any of those that have gone off, because I think, as I said again previously, any that go off in a confined space are likely to infect the others around it. So take them all out, have a look, and are there any that are soft? If there's any that are soft, especially if they're the smaller potatoes, then take out and get rid. If there are any that are gone a bit putrid, well, that obviously speaks volumes. Get rid as soon as possible. That's why it's important to check regularly. And when you move on to roughly December, you will start seeing that the potatoes will be producing sprouts. Now, you don't want those for the ones that you've stored, so you go through those and you remove the sprouts. They will probably come back again in about a month's time, but then you'll have to go through the process again. Hope that's answered that question. What causes potato blight and how to prevent? Very difficult to prevent. It is, you have to ensure that you have crop rotation, but it is a case of weather. Now, a lot of potato blight can happen in main crop potatoes because it's further on in the summer and you're likely to get more rain at that period. And that's why I don't grow main crop. However, it didn't do me much good this year. But that's what happens. It's warm, wet weather. And it's like a fungus. It attaches itself to the the top of the plant and then works its way down, down into eventually into the tubers. So when you do see the browning of the leaves, it is then time to cut off the top part of the potato, which in reality or really should save the tubers under the ground. In my case, it didn't, but that's one of those things. As I say, you can't really prevent it. It is an observation, and it's quite, I'd say it's rare. It's certainly doesn't happen with the first early potatoes. So keep smiling. Powdery mildew, what is it? Well, powdery mildew, it's a fungal disease which targets stems and foliage and covers the surface of the plant. Courgettes and cucumbers and peas are so sceptical. You can mulch, that helps prevent it. It doesn't stop the plant from producing its fruit. It just looks not very nice. However, you can in this day and age apparently now purchase powdery mildew resistant plants and seeds. I personally haven't seen them, but if they produce a crop like you normally produce, then it's worth considering. And the last question I have is leaf scorch on tomatoes. What are the signs? Well, the signs, you will see the signs. It will be brown patches on the leaves, especially at the top. And that is where the sun has caught them. And it especially happens when the plants are too close to the window. Too close to the window, and obviously depending what kind of, certainly in a greenhouse, what kind of shading you have. So it's caused by the sun's rays. You trim away parts of the leaves that are damaged and provide some shade. I mean, if you've got a pot, then move it away from the window or put a shade, but you should have had shade there anyway. When they're outside, there's not a lot you can do because it's open to the elements. So I think that more or less covers the questions that I've been asked, Sue.
Okay, thank you. I must admit, my garden looks fabulous. The hydrangeas this year were enormous and look fabulous. The fuchsias have come out very well. Everything's doing very well at the moment. It does look rather nice. And of course, we've had rain of late, so that helps. Although I believe we're going to get a bit of a heat wave again in a couple of weeks' time, which I, for one, will be looking forward to.
Well, I think we've had rain in the right quantities. Mm. I know it. Sometimes it's certain parts of the country have had floods and that's not the right quantity. Yeah. But I haven't actually used the hose pipe that often this year in the general garden. Yeah. And long that may that continue. And you probably noticed as well, it is certainly been noticeable on the lawns.
Yes.
Because the lawns have stayed green all year, whereas by now they've gone brown.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Trevor, well, thank you very much for all your advice, and we'll see you again at the end, or the beginning, I should say, of September.
Okay, well, have a good month. Good thank month you. Of harvesting and growing.
Okay, thank you very much. Bye, Trevor.
Take care.
And as we have some time left, I thought I would give you a recipe, and it's one of Trevor's favourites. It's the Hairy Biker's Hot Mustard Piccalilli, so you can use all those vegetables to make a wonderful piccalilli. The ingredients are 9 ounces of green beans trimmed, 1 pound, 2 ounces of small cauliflower florets, 9 ounces of courgettes, 3.5 ounces of fine sea salt, 3 onions chopped, 10.5 fluid ounces of malt vinegar, 10.5 fluid ounces of white wine vinegar, 1 heaped tablespoonful of English mustard powder, 1 heaped tablespoonful of ground turmeric, 1 teaspoon of ground ginger, 1 teaspoon of dried chili flakes, 1 ounce of corn flour, and 9 ounces of granulated sugar.
The method. Sterilise the jam jars. First, wash the jars in soapy water and rinse in clean, warm water. Preheat the oven to 140 degrees C, 275F gas 1. Dry the jars upside down on a rack for 30 minutes. Put the vegetables in a non-metallic mixing bowl, sprinkling with salt, and mix well until well combined. Cover with a plate and leave to stand for 24 hours. Rinse the vegetables in several changes of water. Put the onions in a large saucepan and stir in the malt vinegar. Bring to a gentle simmer and cook for 15 minutes. Mix 5 tablespoonfuls of white wine vinegar with the mustard powder, turmeric, ginger, chili flakes and corn flour. Stir the remaining white wine vinegar and sugar into malt vinegar onions until dissolved. Tip the drained vegetables into the same pan, return to a simmer and cook for 10 minutes, stirring occasionally. Stir the corn flour mixture into the pan with the vegetables until well combined. Cook for a further 8 to 10 minutes, stirring regularly until the vegetables are tender but crisp and the sauce has thickened. Put the pickle into the jam jars, ensuring that all vegetables are evenly distributed and leave to cool. Cover with glass or plastic-coated metal lids and seal. Label and store in a cool, dark place for at least a month before eating. And I have tasted this and it's absolutely delicious. And you can get the recipe on our website if you look for Gardener's Question Time. The Gardener's Question Time, that's the BBC. Trevor's Monthly Gardening Diary for August. And follow me now. It is Spotlight with Melanie Green. This is Sue Rodwell-Smith. I hope you've enjoyed the last hour. Take care of yourselves. Bye for now. Bye.